It's so good to be here. My name's Roy, and we used to be members here. I was a minister here from 2015 to 2019. And so when we come back here, it's like coming home. It really is. In fact, so our daughter Miriam and Amelie, they're like 2 months apart from each other. And they haven't seen each other in like, 2 years or something. And it's just, I mean, it's like they're sisters. I mean, they just immediately just cling to one another and get in trouble together. I mean, just like it's like no time has gone by, except Christian Bird is way taller. And my beard, for some reason, got longer. I'm not sure what happened there. It is so good to be here. This church had such a formative place for us. This church family helped my family and I become who we are. And in fact, I don't think we'd be doing the work that we're doing in Temple were it not for our time here at WestU and the continuing friendships and support that you guys have been for us. So when we come back, it is a joy. It really is. And so I'm grateful to be here. I am also grateful that the weather is warm, that it's like late March. Yesterday, we went to the zoo, and I got all sweaty, and then we had to come to the singing thing. And so we were doing the singing thing, and I like was just so conscious of how bad I smelled. My relationship to cold weather has fundamentally changed. Okay, when we lived in Houston, and Temple's hot and muggy too, but you know, living in Houston like that, the weather drops, you know, in December or November, and it's finally, you know, you get a break from all the heat, and you pull out like that jacket that you love, but you don't ever get to wear those sweaters. It's like, oh, new clothes. This is fantastic. Wake up in the morning and it's frigid outside, but you can just kind of sit with your cup of coffee for a few minutes and enjoy that. I miss that because my relationship with cold weather it's different now. Whenever it is cold outside, when that weather drops, it can be a crisis. And it's a crisis actually for our church. About a third of our congregation are currently experiencing homelessness. And so a night outdoors when you have inadequate equipment, inadequate clothing, a lot of times inadequate nutrition, it can be dangerous. And that's the danger of friendship. It's the danger of love, really. Like whenever you are friends with somebody, your sense of well-being can be threatened by their circumstances. It expands our awareness of what different people are going through. Like, I'm kind of paying attention to what's going on in the Ukraine, but some of you may have friends who live there, right? And if you have a friend who lives there, somebody you love who lives there, that crisis means so much more to you than it does to us who are looking at everything from a distance. Like, proximity to pain shapes our awareness so that we can't ignore what people are up to. So for the last 3 years, what we've done at Impact is we've operated an overnight warming shelter. And I'll share a little bit more about that in a minute. But we've been blessed by a lot of community partners. You guys, this Christmas, sent us a bunch of sleeping bags and warm clothing for that. Thank you. We were looking at our data recently, and our average number of guests per night was somewhere between 40 and 50 folks. The fire marshal told us that 49 was our max capacity, and we cheated on that a few nights. Our total number, we served over 140 different individuals throughout the course of the season, people who came in. Temple's not that big a city. Our latest kind of thorough survey and count was that we had about 250 people who regularly live on the streets. I share that because I think that speaks to the way the Holy Spirit will invite communities to participate in God's mission of saving and restoring lives. He does that through friendship and proximity to pain and suffering. Jesus uses friendship to call us into his mission of saving and restoring lives. Now, Impact is not a social service organization. We're a church. which is an expression of the body of Christ. And one of my favorite things to tell people, because it confuses them and throws them off, is Impact does not serve the homeless. If we say that Impact serves the homeless, then what we're doing is we're drawing a differentiation between Impact a church and people who are homeless, and like the church serves them. And that's not what is happening here. We are a community. Some of us homeless, some of us live in secure housing. We work together to solve and to meet the problems around us. And in a little bit, I'll share just a couple of glimpses of what that looks like. But what's important about that is that what we're doing is we're collaborating and working together to share the goodness of Jesus. And it's that goodness that I want to talk about tonight, this morning, whatever time it is. That's what I want to talk about. Any ministry, any church, and frankly, all of our lives as disciples is lived as an extension and as a response to who Jesus is, what he has done, and what he is continuing to accomplish in this world. And so I love this story. I love this story. It has a lot of resonances with my particular community. I love this story because it's in the middle of Jesus' teaching and healing ministry in Galilee. And he takes his disciples to this place. And it has to feel to the disciples, when they get off that boat, that they're just in the wrong place at the wrong time. Okay, so they get off the boat, they pull ashore, and they're in the outskirts of this new town. This is not the area that they've normally been in. It's on the other side of the Sea of Galilee, the region of the Gerasenes. There's a town over there, but it's a little bit of a different place. It's more Gentile territory. So they get off the boat, and one of the things that they probably see up on the hill are pigs. Those nasty, awful, unclean animals that for some disgusting reason the Gentiles will actually eat for food. They have this thing called bacon. How gross is that? But that's what they see. And I've got to imagine that when they see that, it kind of stirs up those feelings of uneasiness. Whenever we walk into a place and it's like, man, this is not my normal place. I feel like I don't belong here. I think that might be some of the feelings that they're feeling as they step off the boat. Not only that, but they're on the outskirts of a town and apparently in view of a cemetery, the tombs. And so immediately you have stirring up in the disciples these other concerns about contamination and cleanliness that arise in these Jewish disciples when they see those tombs there. And it's in this place of discomfort that they see something that I imagine appears like just a horror, that this figure rises up from the tombs and he is naked and he is disfigured with wounds both old and new, and he is still wearing broken shackles that couldn't restrain him. And this shambling horror of a thing is coming at them. And he is wailing with a voice that maybe it sounds beyond human, and yet it is full of fear and pain. And it approaches Jesus and the disciples. And again, I just got to wonder, like, what are the disciples feeling in this moment? Fear? Disgust? You know, pity, perhaps? And it collapses at Jesus' feet. And it's still got that tortured screaming. It's not going to stop. And Jesus bends down toward him. And the screaming forms itself into words. What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High? I beg you, don't torture me. Now, I wonder, like, how long it takes the disciples to figure out what's happening here. To figure out what's going on, that this thing that is in front of them is a person, a man who is possessed and afflicted by a demonic presence that's taken root in his own body and in his own mind. This man has lost the ability to function, to choose right and wrong, He can't speak his own words. He can't live in his own society. He cannot love his own family. Like, his whole self has just been robbed from him by this demonic power. I imagine it takes the disciples a little bit of time to see through the horror of the scene, to see past his nakedness, the weirdness of it, and to see this man for who he is. He's a person. He's afflicted, but he's a person still. He's a man. He has a name. He's a man created and known and loved by God. Jesus sees the man. Jesus does so easily and clearly what I think some of us struggle to do, and that is to see the person and to see the affliction, but also to see the person. Sometimes whenever we have somebody who's going through some crisis, that crisis kind of overshadows the rest of their identity. Like, this person over here is schizophrenic. Well, I mean, yeah, they have schizophrenia, but like, there's more going on to their lives than just that. You know, or this is a cancer patient or an addict or a shut-in or a homeless person. And some of us have gone through these trials in our life, and maybe we've noticed that as we're going through those trials, people are looking at us a little bit differently. Maybe not remembering that we are more than our circumstances. Jesus sees this, and he can differentiate. There's a man here, and then there are the problems he's having, the affliction, the demons. And so he addresses the problem. He addresses the demons directly. "What is your name?" he asks them. "Legion," he replies. And those disciples, you know, they just kind of like ran backwards a little bit. Because Legion in the Roman, like a Roman legion is thousands of soldiers. So whatever that is implying is terrifying. "Legion," he says. And yet, this demonic thing, these demonic beings that are in this person are cowering at the foot of Jesus and begging Jesus for mercy. Do we see that power differential there? Yeah. Does that maybe open up some possibilities of folks whose affliction maybe we might write off as impossible? They cower. And I don't know why Jesus does what he does. I don't know why, when the demons ask not to face the judgment that's coming to them, not to be cast into the abyss, that Jesus acquiesces to that. But Jesus does, and he casts them out, and they go, and they go into the pigs, and the pigs, they rush down and drown themselves in the water. And the man there, Jesus has called forth this man's identity. He has seen the truth of him, and now this man is able to live in that truth of who he really is, who God created him to be. There's care there, because by the time the townspeople get to where they are, the man is clothed. Somebody has wrapped clothing around him, and he is sitting probably for the first time in a very long time in his right mind. And yet, when the townspeople get there, there is not just like a huge celebration. There's fear. And there's suspicion and skepticism. I mean, maybe it's fear of just being in the presence of something they don't understand. Like, we understand a person who's messed up. We don't understand a person who was messed up and is now well. That freaks us out a little bit. And then there's this suspicion that, you know, you have seen this guy. You've seen him in town. You've seen him outside of town. You have seen the damage that he has done under the influence of that demonic presence. And now he seems fine, but is he really fine? He seems okay, but is he going to stay okay? There is a fear here. And so they ask Jesus to leave. And the guy asks Jesus, "Hey, can I go with you?" And I just cannot imagine a more natural request. Can I please go with you and not have to stick around this place? This place with these people who saw what I did. This place where there is damage that I did. That there is a family here. That the demonic presence that Satan working in my life has done. And instead of staying here and having to live with it, having to rebuild trust, having to do that really hard, hard work, can I just please go with you, Jesus? And Jesus tells him, no, you can't. The man is asking, I want to be a disciple. I want to be a follower. And Jesus puts him on a path of discipleship that is harder. No, you need to go back home. And it is going to be hard to go back home after all of this. It is going to be difficult. And they may not accept you. And they may always look at you like they're expecting you to do something weird again. But here is where you need to stay. Return home and tell how much God has done for you. That work of making amends, of rebuilding life, rebuilding trust in your community, that is going to be hard and humbling work. But if he doesn't do it, if he doesn't stay, they're never going to really understand the healing power of Jesus. It is not easy to stay home or to return home. In the middle of life change, after life change, usually our community changes, our relationships change, because staying home can be hard. Home can be an inhospitable place for people. The things that we did and we said when we were not in our right minds, when we were in the midst of our addictions, when we were suffering from undiagnosed mental illness or just caught up in sin, those things do real damage, and they can hurt the people that we are closest to. And people who are close to us can hurt us. One of my good friends, she experienced a very radical, kind of black and white deliverance from meth addiction. And I mean, her life over the last 5 years has been radically transformed. She has grown in her leadership abilities. She is a fantastic mother. She is a wonderful coach, especially to any other women who struggle with addiction. I mean, she is just, what God has done in her life is, it's just miraculous. And yet her own mother still expects her to be an addict and still treats her, you know, kind of from a distance with skepticism and with fear. It can be hard to go back home and to stay home even after life change. Look, the work that Satan does damage, and that damage can persist even after Christ has brought this remarkable and miraculous healing. And here is where I think God calls the church to show up, to be that community that clothes the man and that embraces him and sees and can testify with him that what God has done in his life is real. It's real. And that can be hard. Our congregation in Temple, so it's called Impact Temple Church. Yet that name does speak to our relationship to Impact Church of Christ here in Houston, very closely connected with that work and with that mission. Our church seems to be home to a lot of people, the vast majority of people in our church. They have experienced, and the world may see them as afflicted. These are people who were addicted or are addicted, who are homeless or were homeless. We're very open about our mental illness because, I mean, frankly, we just can't hide it. Unemployment, underemployment. Many of our adults have some kind of criminal record. And so putting life back together after having a felony on your record, that's really hard. Just practically speaking is hard. So my friend Kenneth once said, he was very surprised and touched one day. He said, Impact isn't like any church I've been. Out there, we're the criminal element. And yet in here, we're just the community. You just love us. That love, I mean, that's not our love. That's just the love of Christ. But it is transformative. Tiffany caught a glimpse of this the other day. Leon, not this Leon, different Leon. Leon had had like a long bout of sobriety, I mean, years. But he lost his housing, and he found himself living in his truck. And whenever you lose the stability of housing, a lot of other things, I mean, they kind of come back. The stress and the, frankly, trauma of living outdoors and being worried about your stuff and your safety, it's going to be really hard to keep those bad coping mechanisms at bay. And so he relapsed. And he came into church. Was this last Sunday, Tiff, or the Sunday before? And he came in and he found Denny. Denny is one of our leaders, somebody a lot of people trust. Denny was in the kitchen with Tiffany, and it wasn't a small bag. It was a substantial bag of methamphetamines. Like, just hands her the bag of meth and a glass pipe. Okay? Now, I understand, here in Westview, maybe you haven't seen meth. Guess what? Until I moved to Temple, I'd never seen meth. I've seen it quite a bit now. Hands it to them and says, please get rid of this. And Tiffany and Denny dump probably a substantial amount of money's worth of meth down the garbage disposal. Because Leon knew that he could walk into this space because of what Christ has done in his life and the way that God has shown up for him, even in the middle of his relapse. He knew that he could walk into, there was one place that he could go into, and he wasn't going to be judged for it. We were just going to celebrate the victory of the moment. That's what we did. We just celebrated with him the victory of that decision to get rid of what he had. So if this formerly demon-possessed guy, he's got to re-enter the city and he has to re-enter society. And I wonder what would happen to him if instead of being met with fear and suspicion and resentment, he was met by a people of God that ran out to meet him. Jim, you talked about the prodigal son. What would it be like if there were people running out to embrace that prodigal son, embracing with the love of God himself? What if we believed the story of his healing, of Jesus in his life, and we celebrated it with them? We clothed him. We walked with him as he did all of that hard reconciling work. We prayed with him before he had to face his family. What if we didn't keep a record of wrongs, but affirmed his new calling to proclaim Jesus? And what if that community included other people who were, frankly, just as messed up as he was? People who had demon possession themselves. Who, whenever he shared his story, would hear something along the lines of, yeah, me too. I know what that's like. I know what it's like to do the work you have to do now. And so let's do that together. God has given all of us different stories, different gifts. He has walked us through so many different struggles, so much pain. And now, because of that, our own stories can become the very place in which people see the healing power of Jesus. And the hard thing about testimony, folks, is that usually if I'm going to be talking about the healing power of Jesus in my life, you guys are going to be hearing, like, bad stories about Roy. Like, I'm not going to come off looking good in this. Because that's how Jesus works. In those places that we are often ashamed to talk about, or often ashamed to be. This man couldn't hide his afflictions. A lot of us can. And just like him, we need that healing power. So I want to share a couple of things. I got some pictures here. I just want to share with you a little bit about impact for a couple of reasons. One, I'm there, but also because you guys, some in this congregation and the congregation itself, this is a part of your work. And so it's just a funny little logo here. So this is a picture from our warming shelter. This was before dinner one night. We probably, dinner's at 6. This was at 6 o'clock, and then people kind of come in all through the night. But this is just us praying before the meal, and I think we sang Lean on Me that night. We just had a great time, and somebody shot a picture of it. So, yeah, I think our average guest per night is 43. Over 140 different individuals throughout the season stayed at the shelter. Friends, it's a good thing. I'm glad we do it because it's necessary. I am so glad, the warm weather is here because, frankly, it just, sucks the energy out of everything else whenever we're having to work shifts and get volunteers and do that hard work. But this is a picture of some of the folks who are just part of our community, but especially who worked the or who were part of the warming shelter last year when we had the big ice storm. So the mayor of Temple had sent out some keys to the city plaques and a little letter just thanking different organizations for stepping up during the winter storm. And here's what I've had to tell people. Because our warming shelter and just about everything else we do is very collaborative, the ability for us to function is because everybody is working together. And so during that one, we were open 24 hours for 12 days in a row. And what happened was we started losing power. And so people who live in homes, they would lose power, especially elderly folks. They were being displaced. And because we were already a warming shelter, we were the first place people started going to until we were way at capacity. Then we opened up some other shelters. But for 12 days, the people who are part of the Impact community, who know how the warming center runs, they were the ones who were doing most of the work, the cooking, cleaning, serving. People would be coming in, and these are the folks who are making a place for them. In other words, our homeless community worked their tails off to provide a safe and hospitable place for people who have homes but were temporarily displaced. So when we got that letter, that's not for the church leaders. That letter of appreciation is for people who live on the street who stepped up that week. I just can't think of a better example of what it means when we say that we're a community together. There was one night, there was a week or so where, man, this guy was just cooking breakfast early mornings. One morning he got up and he made 100 pancakes. I'm usually the breakfast guy. I just stepped back. The man, he was a cook in the Army. Man, he got it done. Here's a picture of Cliff next to a bunch of donuts. This is from Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is one of our it's one of the biggest things that we do. We have a big Thanksgiving banquet. This is our 7th year of existence, so it's going to be our Jubilee celebration. I'm looking forward to that. This was a couple years ago, because of COVID, we had to do it outside in the parking lot, and it's just a picture of that. And then that got cut off here. So I want to share a couple of different things that are in development right now. One is the Impact Clubhouse. We've actually filed for a 501c3 for this ministry. This is a collaborative community that seeks to equip people who live with mental illness and substance abuse disorders to experience, we call it, you know, recovery, life change, and a meaningful supportive community. So this is a membership organization that people can come and be a part of. And so say like you need to work on some of your stuff, paperwork for your IDs or get into housing and all this kind of stuff. When you navigate those systems, you become an expert in those systems. Like if you've had to do all the work of navigating how to get housing, like public housing, well, you now know how to do that. And so with the clubhouse, you come and you work on your stuff, but you're also learning how to work on stuff. And there are some training opportunities for peer advocacy and things like that. So if you've had to navigate those, now you're able to help somebody else navigate that. And so this is kind of in its beginning stages, but my friend Neil has taken over as the director of this, and it's good. We've had 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we have people in the building. We have folks who they gather, they're working. Right now, it's a lot of people who are working on their IDs and making sure they're getting Social Security and all of that kind of stuff. But the expectation is you're not coming to receive a service. You're coming to be equipped. Equipped for your own work, but then also equipped to help other people who come in, who have the same issues that you have. So that's the clubhouse. And then here's a picture of I think we were doing some art therapy that day. But just a kind of an image of what it looks like. Now, the other thing that is we've had like a youth and kids ministry in the last couple of years, you know, because of COVID and some other changes and things. That's been a little bit neglected. Our focus has been a lot on neighborhood adults and our homeless friends. So we are now kind of reinvesting and working in that area, looking at, man, can we be a church that serves the homeless and has, you know, a great place for kids and youth? On our street, we have about 25 kids under the age of 18 within a half mile of the church. And so it's very important that we're creating a safe space for discipleship for those kids and for their families. And so we just recently brought on a youth minister. And now we have, it's a big room, but it's an empty room. And so we're outfitting that with some furniture and things like that so that we can have an attractive space for kids to come, especially, our vision is especially kids in our neighborhood to come and to be a part of a youth ministry, and geographically, our church is quite a bit more accessible than some of the big youth ministries in town. So, it's a really fantastic opportunity. Stanley, I think, asked if there was something that people could be contributing to, and so I said, well, yeah, you know, if people wanted to contribute, to make donations to help us outfit that youth space, that would be fantastic. All of this is, it's in response to a couple of things. One, friendship with people who are in pain, relationship, and just the goodness and the healing power of Jesus. I get to see it, you get to see it. It's all around us. And I know the crazy thing is that God allows us to be a part of it. And it's a wonderful thing. And it's that healing power. It really is that relationship with Jesus, that surrendering our lives, that recognizing our affliction and giving it to Him, surrendering it to Him. It is truly life-changing. And I know this community. This community has changed my life. This community is a community in which the Holy Spirit is present and working. And so, if I may, I want to speak on behalf of this community and just invite you, if there's a way to respond to Jesus's call, to be a follower of his, to experience healing, to experience grace in a new way, I want to invite you to come. And the leaders of this church will guide you and walk with you in that process. So I want to invite you to do that now as we stand and sing.